Welcome to Improving Sales Performance, a podcast highlighting tips and insights aimed at helping sales organizations realize and maybe even exceed their goals. Here, we chat with thought leaders, experts, and gurus who have years of sales experience from a wide range of industries. This season, we're analyzing the findings from our latest media sales report. With data collected from surveys conducted in Q4 of last year, the responses from sales managers and salespeople alike will help us chart a solid path forward through the media sales landscape. In each episode, I'll be joined by a rolling roster of outstanding experts from our team here at the Center for Sales Strategy. Together, we'll break it all down. I'm your host, Matt Sunshine, CEO at the Center for Sales Strategy, a sales performance consulting company. Oh, what a great topic we have today. I love when the media sales report comes out because we get to do these podcasts where we jump in and really dissect and talk about the things that are important that we're pulling out of it. It's kind of like how to read the media sales report. And today on the podcast is Emily Esty, who's VP Senior Consultant for the Center for Sales Strategy, and someone that I've had the privilege of working with for like a million years, almost 16 years. Wow. Time flies when you're having fun. All right, Emily, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's jump in. So media sales report comes out. It's loaded with information. Today, we are going to focus on the learning and development. We're going to zoom in on learning and development. So just as a general, let's kick it off. Are there any stats or is there any data that jumped out or surprised you?
Well, I know we're going to tackle this, but honestly, the 85% of people, you know, salespeople feel that training is important or very important. That was actually a little surprising to me because, you know, what we hear, at least maybe from managers, is that, you know, there's always kind of this grumbling around training, right? And then people are like, I don't have any training, I'm fine. So that actually was higher than I thought it was going to be, and encouraging, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, as people come into, I think we, you know, we're developing a generations of learners, people that like to learn, hopefully, that would be great. But I think that statistic really, you know, gave me hope. I was like, yes, thank God.
I have, it's funny that you say that, and we were going to jump right into that.
Yeah.
But I had a very veteran salesperson and sales manager who I was meeting with one day, a few years back, said to me, you know, if you didn't call it training and you just called it practice, I think you'd get more buy-in. And I go, really, why? And they go, I don't know. I think sometimes training has a stigma of you don't know what you're doing, so you need training. Practice has a stigma of you know what you're doing, just you got to practice. Because, and I was like, okay, well, we'll call it practice. I said, I don't know what we call it. Okay, so looking at the data, and you brought this up, so I'm going to reiterate, the vast majority of salespeople, 85%, agree that having access to learning and development opportunities is important or very important. That's awesome. 80% of salespeople say they are participating in training on a weekly or monthly basis. So 80%, almost all of them, 85% are saying it's important. 80% say I'm getting it at least monthly or weekly. So what advice would you give to sales leaders that are only giving to the 20% who aren't?
Right.
What advice would you give
to the other 20%?
Yes.
I would say that, first of all, there must not be perceived value for them in training. Like they must not see that. And so my first thing would be, look, you raise and set standards with training, right? You can count on predictable results with training. You can get the team consistent in their language, which builds culture. Like there's all of these reasons. it creates retention, and it's great when you're hiring. I mean, we've been hired because people were trying to hire people and they were like, well, what's your training program? And companies that we were working with, like, well, we don't have one. I guess we should get one. Like, it helps employing new people, obviously. But I think what happens is people don't have a plan. Managers don't have a plan. And so it's something that just gets put off and put off and put off. So I would start by saying to a manager, make a quarterly plan. Prepare, plan it out. Don't be like, oh my God, Monday. I've been there as a sales manager. Oh, it's Monday. I need some sales training. Make a plan, make a quarterly plan, start small, maybe poll your people and figure out where they really feel like they might be struggling. Go along with do training just with your sales process, just start somewhere. But I'm telling you, I think if 85% of salespeople are saying they want training, then we better provide it. Like, we better be that organization that builds a culture around practice of skills. Like, you don't just get, I mean, you take any team anywhere. If we're going to use the sports analogy, what are they doing? They're playing a game one day a week or 2 days a week, but they're practicing the rest of the time. So, you know, you got to do it.
Every profession practices.
Every profession.
Lawyers go into practice courtrooms with mock juries so that they can figure out. Doctors practice, pilots practice. Every profession practices, except salespeople don't think that they need to practice. But the research says that 85% think it's important.
Yeah.
So I think the 15% that don't just are very vocal.
Yeah. Exactly.
So over half the salespeople, 54%, tell us that their manager talks to them often about their talents.
Yeah.
So that's good. 54%. Yep, that's great. For those people, that's good. However, one third of salespeople responded that while their manager discusses their talents with them often, it merely feels like all they're doing is checking a box. All right. So do you have any thoughts on how to best avoid the box checking?
Yeah. First of all, you know, way to go, managers, for talking to your team about their talents. First of all, like, way to go. And I'm sorry that you just, you know, can't win for losing, you know, like, yeah, you're talking to me about my talents, but it's not good enough.
Right. Exactly. Give me a break.
So I had a little heart like, oh, that's too bad. But what I would say about this, because it is, I get that it can feel that way. I work in an organization where my talents are repeated back to me, right? I mean, that's what we do here. And I understand how sometimes maybe that can feel that way. But my thought around this is that maybe get your people talking. Have them talk about a success that they're having or maybe a frustration that they're having. And then reflect back to them with the talent that you're seeing. Like, for instance, like, I can see why you might be frustrated by that, because you have such strong responsibility that when people don't do what they say they're going to do, it makes you really frustrated. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me. So instead of like just saying, oh, yeah, remember, you're super responsible and very positive, and, you know, maybe get them talking first so that then you can repeat back what you're actually seeing, where you're seeing the talents bubble up in what they're doing. That would be my first thought around that. Making it a little bit more authentic.
Yeah. You know, I'll piggyback on that. I'll say this. If you're a client of ours, you should get on the phone with a talent analyst and say to them, hey, if I want to give some coaching or if I want to give some feedback on talents, what are some of the things I can say, or what are some of the things I can do? Yeah. I know our talent analysts are happy to do that.
Always. I mean, that's generally always my first recommendation. Yeah. You know, and if you are using two or three, you know, almost always in those calls, they'll give you those priority coaching strategies. Mix it up, like, have a call every quarter on those folks and get new priority coaching strategies. You know, I think that's awesome advice. Yeah. Love that.
I'd say this too. If you're using another talent assessment mm-hmm. that's not ours, mm-hmm. Demand that type of thing from whatever assessment that you're using. 100%. And if you're not using a talent assessment, start using one.
Start using one.
100%. Period. Like, start using one.
And don't just use a talent assessment to select people. Use
it for coaching, training, developing.
They're very expensive selection tools.
Yeah,
they're used to coach.
That's right. If all you're going to do is selection, you're missing the boat. You're missing out on the best opportunity. It's how do you develop these people? All right, so let's jump back in here.
Yep.
So almost half of the sales managers, in fact, 45%, considered about 21 to 40% of their sales team to be superstars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And 18% of sales managers believe that 40% or more are underperforming. Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty big chunk, about one fifth of sales managers believe that 40% of or more are underperforming. So what would you say to managers trying to keep their superstars performing consistently at that level? Let's take that question first. Managers trying to keep superstars performing at that consistently high level.
Yeah. So I'll come back to that, but remind me to come back to that for both of these categories. There's something I think they should do, but for top performers and people that you want to just keep, they want to keep on going because they want to keep on going. I can tell you that they want more and more success. And all I would say is support, support, support. Like, where are you taking back end stuff off of them?
Yes.
If you're making them do non-selling tasks, make sure that you're figuring out a way to take some of that stuff off their plate. Sometimes folks like this can be pretty, want to have all their things like this. Make them chip away at some of those non-selling tasks and give some of them up, maybe not all at once, but make them do that. And then whatever resources you have that you can throw at them, maybe there's a some sort of executive salesperson training, or maybe you can give them coaching, or maybe you can do something special for them. And then I also would say, I encourage my managers to get involved in the sales process, be an influencer for your salespeople. Maybe you write a thank you note, or you get engaged at some point, you go to the discovery meeting, or you help with the advise portion. Like, get engaged in that process with them. You don't have to close the business. That's not what I'm talking about. They don't need your help there. But how can you help be an influencer? You know, when we have clients, I want as many people in our organization to have a relationship with them, because I think that makes them feel special, and you want your clients and prospects to feel special in that same way. So, get engaged in the process. Ask where you can help, even in the client-facing conversations.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you're talking, I'm thinking about top performing salespeople that I'll regularly hear say, I don't need a manager to check on me. I need them to bring value.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's what you're saying. Like, yes. It's not just a matter of checking on them to make sure that they're doing it. They're doing it. Right.
Right.
You don't need to worry about that.
Right.
But bring value to them is hugely important. You'll keep them engaged.
Yes. And asking, how can I bring value here? How can I help you close this business? I mean, again, they're doing their job. You don't need to make sure they're doing their job. Generally, people that are, well, they're clearly doing their job. They're performing, right?
So let's jump now and talk to the other ones. What would you say to the managers that are trying to inspire and engage those underperforming?
Yeah. So If you have somebody that is highly talented and they're underperforming, which sometimes we don't, sometimes we have really not talented people who are underperforming, which makes sense. But if we have people that have talent, I would remind them that they have the talent to do the job. I do that all the time when I'm coaching individuals and they're feeling kind of down in the dumps. I'm like, let me just remind you, you have all the talent you need to do this job, to be successful here. I do it all the time. And then I'd be honest with about their performance. I would say, here's where I see some opportunities to improve. And we have to get this figured out. Like, have those honest conversations. And then also, I think people that are underperforming, especially if they have talent, drives and values talents, they know they're underperforming, and it's overwhelming to underperform for those folks. So I would probably say we're going to eat this elephant one bite at a time. We're going to start with helping you identify qualified prospects. That's where we're going to start this process. And then I'm going to help you. We're going to make a connect plan for each one of these people, like break it down for them. There's a difference between say, oh, you're not performing, you need to perform. And people, I mean, a lot of times that is overwhelming. So if you really want to invest in them, then I would break it down and help them eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Now, you asked me to remind you of something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, when we're talking about talented performers or people that are underperforming, just engage with your people. Like, look at them face to face, look at them eye to eye, get off your phone, get away from your computer, and have a conversation that's not distracted. It's amazing in this world how often how often when we have a conversation with someone, we're distracted by something else. So when we're not, it feels really, really special. That's how you let people know that you care about them, is by disengaging with everything else and engaging one-on-one with someone. And I would say for top performers or underperformers, or really anybody that you're talking to, engage, like get engaged.
You and I both saw a speaker years ago. I don't remember his name, but he's the person that taught us how to juggle. And one of the things he said was, don't multitask people.
That was his, don't multitask people.
When you're with me, be with me.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
and that goes for all of it, right? Like that goes for your salespeople, that goes for your kids, that goes, I mean, across the board, that's applicable. Yeah.
I saw someone sent me something the other day. And it was it was a challenge to have an 8-minute phone conversation with someone where you didn't do anything else but pay attention to the phone conversation. And they said, believe it or not, that is way more difficult than you think that it is.
Yeah.
Do you ever, because, you know, one of the things, like after you get off the phone with someone and you look at how long you talk to them and you realize you only talk to them like for 5 minutes. Right. And during that time, you checked your text messages, right? You checked your email, you did something else.
Yes.
Right. And so yeah. I think that you're right about being engaged, being intentional, being focused. And I'll just add this to the learning and development segment of this podcast, is I think that sales leaders that make learning and development part of their ritual, like their flag, right? Their flag that they fly is that, hey, you come work here, you're going to grow. You come work here, I promise you, you're going to professionally grow. Yep. You're going to learn more. You're going to do more. I just think people that, as difficult as recruitment is these days, 85% of salespeople want to go somewhere, want a place where learning and development is made available to them.
Yeah.
I just think this is a huge opportunity for business.
I do too. I think it's great. I think making a plan, I mean, if you're a client of ours, we have the resources for you for sales
training. For sure.
Obviously. Absolutely. Sales training kits, all of the things. But I think also, you know, there's also, you can source so much information too. I mean, you can source so much information online. It's just about, you do need to make a little bit of a plan. When I do training for my clients, I have to prepare, right? I have to prepare a week or so before. So you gotta, I know, with all the things you need to add to your calendar, but when it's this important to people, it's worth the effort.
That's exactly right. All right, and with that, we're gonna end this segment on learning and development, but it's so important. And Emily, I can't thank you enough for taking your time to jump on the podcast, share your wisdom, share your insights, and we really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been Improving Sales Performance. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, join us every week by clicking the subscribe button. For more on the topics covered in the show, visit our website, thecenterforsalesstrategy.com. There, you can find helpful resources and content aimed at improving your sales performance. And if you'd like to connect with any of us, including today's guest, please do. You can find our contact information in the show notes. Until next time, get out there and sell.